Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Well, that was fast. They've really done it this time, haven't they? Extinction Rebellion, Vancouver Island, or similarly affiliated persons have already set up a blockade outside the home of BC Premier John Horgan. We were told the Premier wasn't even home when it was set up earlier this morning. The Premier returned home afterward, perhaps after learning that his property was being targeted. It's unclear at this time if anyone else was in the structure and whether that played a role in the Premier's decision to return home. Again, this is what it sounded like as the television cameras arrived this morning to find the setup already being effected.
Good morning, Horgan.
What's Horgan? You invaded the Wet'suwet'en homeland. You made it personal, John.
You hear one of them saying, "Oh, that's awesome." Oh, no, it's not awesome. They're all in cuffs now. Our understanding is that RCMP have cleared that particular area, as would be expected of them, and our understanding is the Premier is no longer on scene. I don't know how long they'll be in cuffs. Maybe they're already out, but there's a line, and that line got crossed today. Actually, I think the line got crossed last week, honestly, on the February the 11th protests, as they were called by those who were extremely charitable at the BC legislature, where any number of MLAs and ministers were at best intimidated and menaced, and at worst, well, we'll allow appropriate processes to play themselves out, won't we? I don't even know what to say today. I've spent like the last year and a half warning this was going to happen, warning that the more we seek to appease those on the extreme side of the environmental spectrum, rather than repaying that with good faith cooperation, they see it as a sign of weakness and an invitation to attack and push even further. And again, as you heard in the jubilation of one of the bystanders there this morning, they talk a good game about being concerned about Wet'suwet'en rights, about being concerned about the climate, but you still have that, hear that giddy, "Oh, this is awesome," in the background. One of them that probably wasn't sure that they were being recorded at that particular time. It's not okay to target a politician's family. It's never okay to target a politician's home. I don't care if they're a right-wing politician, a left-wing politician. I don't care if they're conservative, socialist, NDP, whatever. Family is off limits. And that limit was breached today, wasn't it? So I don't really know what's going to happen next. I can't imagine anybody out there thinking that it'll make things better. I can't imagine anyone honestly arguing that we should persist in a state of affairs where the course of an entire province with nearly 5 million people in it can be determined through fear of this province's first minister worrying about things that we all worry about, like the safety of his home and the safety of his family. No, they made a mistake today. And they might not realize it yet. They may be happy. They may be talking about how much fun this is. And, oh, isn't this awesome? No, it's not awesome. They have no idea what they are starting. And they have no idea how far things will go in terms of ensuring the safety of those who determine the course that governance takes in this province. If you show people that when you are nice to them, all you do is attack them more, they're going to stop being nice. And they're going to take every step they need to take to make sure that they are protected and safe and able to do their jobs. I don't know how many more times I have to say this. In fact, I don't even want to say it anymore. I just want to sit back, get a lawn chair, grab some popcorn, and watch natural consequences visit themselves upon those who have provoked them over and over and over. Let's do some calls on this. 250-386-1161 star 1070. My understanding is member of the Legislative Assembly for the riding of Victoria Hillside from 2001 to 2005, Sheila Orr, is calling into the program. Sheila, is that you?
It is me. Thank you for taking my call, Adam, because just listening to you enrages me to what happened to me. They did the same thing. They came to my home at 4:30 in the morning. You know, and I still had a child at home then. And then they did exactly the same thing. Not, they didn't block off my home, but they crept in the dark of night and then waited and then started playing trumpets and bongos and, I mean, woke the neighborhood up. And it was also on the day of the budget. And I'm telling you, you're absolutely right. It is totally unacceptable That home was my home. That's Horgan's home. Horgan does not deserve that, and no politician deserves to have anybody infringe on their private property and their private lives. And it makes me furious just listening to you and listening to what you said about that person thinking it was a bit of a fun game. It's not fun. You know, when as a politician, I don't care what party you're in. Well, as a politician, you do it for a good service. You do it because you want to be involved in your community. We all do it for a good reason. Now, people may not like what we say and not like what we do, and everyone knows I'm a liberal. And,
yes.
But absolutely, that's at the legislature. That's at your constituency office. That's your job. You know, just because I don't like the price of my hydro bill, I don't go to the CEO of BC Hydro and stand outside his house. I mean, has anybody ever done that? That we're just people doing our job.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with you. I think Horgan had every right to go there and get cross. I would have been even crosser, actually.
You know what? And absolutely. That he wasn't there, and he came home, presumably, to protect his home and protect his family. Oh. I think he earns full praise from me today, and I am so sorry he had to deal with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. They're just idiots. And you know, I tell you something, it's getting worse.
Yeah,
it's almost like these activists are almost like a growth industry.
Yeah,
you know? And they don't know what they're there for. They don't know what they're really standing up for. It's outrageous. And I do thank you for letting me say that. But I do feel really badly for what happened to Horgan. He does not deserve that.
Yeah. Sheila Orr, thanks for calling in. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. That's Sheila Orr, member of the Legislative Assembly here in the Victoria area for a number of years. Horgan isn't the only Minister of the Crown who has been intimidated or harassed lately, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure there are subsequent stories that will come out. It is getting worse. I agree with Sheila Orr's assessment. I don't know. I used to get called a leftist all the time because I was all pro-carbon tax and, oh, can't we be nice and can't we do reconciliation? And the spectrum seems to be dragged so far to the left these days that anyone who expresses even a scintilla of reason or moderate positions gets attacked as if there's some far-right ideologue. Like, it's getting ridiculous. In fact, it's been ridiculous for a while. You know what it is getting? It's getting dangerous. And there are those out there who think it's fun. See, I think that animates a substantial portion of the protest actions that we see. I think it's people who delight in causing chaos, who delight in feeling large and important, perhaps because they have holes inside themselves due to a lack of meaningful interpersonal connections or accomplishments in life. And they seek to fill that void that howls every single evening as they're by themselves searching for meaning in the world by disrupting the lives of those around them. Because in that moment, that thrill and that exhilaration makes them feel like they're actually worth something. And it is tragic that there are human beings who think so poorly of themselves in this world. And it is tragic that unhealthy outlets exist for human beings such as that disrupt the lives of everyone else who's just trying to get along and do their jobs. But quite frankly, your personal problems out there should not be the rest of the world's problems. I'm sorry I have to say that. Sometimes the truth hurts, but let's be honest here. This is about people who enjoy causing chaos. This is about people who enjoy frustrating the ordinary undertakings of society. They might not even realize it consciously. In fact, I'm certain that most of them don't, because if they did, they'd realize how they look, they'd realize how ridiculous all of this is, and they would stop and govern themselves more appropriately. I ask, if the Premier's residence is a safe target, what's next? Really? Like, is there anywhere that's off limits after that? Who do they send after that? All right. Your calls, 250-386-1161, star 1070, a free call on your wireless device. It's getting ridiculous. It's gone far enough. RCMP, as far as I know, arrested everybody there that morning, or to this morning, and they should have. I have no idea what charges may or may not arise from this matter. I fully support the right for those of us who are ordinary citizens to hold politicians to account. I do it every single day. Sometimes the politicians whine and complain about it too. Oh, he's being so unfair. You know what? I'll never go to anybody's house. I will never, ever threaten anyone with violence. I will never, ever threaten anyone's family. I rely on the strength of my arguments, the strength of my words, the strength of what I express here in the marketplace of ideas. You know why? because I understand that once you go down that road where threats start, where intimidation starts, where people start talking about going to other people's homes, that's where it all falls apart. Down that path lies only ruin. Quick break. Call's coming up. Stay with us.
You're listening to Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
I said it last week that it wasn't okay what was happening to MLAs and ministers of the Crown as they try to enter the BC legislature. And again, not everything that happened last week has been reported yet. I trust it will be in the fullness of time. It is out of respect for the processes that needed to unfold, or need to unfold, I should say, that I withhold comment on those matters. Premier John Horgan's home was targeted this morning. Extinction Rebellion sent out a release yesterday. I got it to, actually, we got it to the communal email here for our newsroom, and I got it to my personal email as well at 5:20 last evening. Extinction Rebellion asked for phone numbers for media, where they would tell media what was going to happen this morning right before it did. My understanding is that there were phone calls issued to media on or around 7:20 this morning for a 7:45 planned blockade of Premier John Horgan's home. I became aware of this matter shortly before 7:30 today. We did not report it until it actually happened for any number of reasons. One, you don't want to encourage it. Two, you don't want to make sure it's not a hoax. And three, nothing good happens after this for anybody involved. Let's go to Wayne. Hey, Wayne, welcome to the program. What do you think? Extinction Rebellion blockading the Premier's home. My understanding is that scene was cleared like that. But what do you think the fallout's going to be?
Well, I don't think it's a good thing at all anytime anybody shows up at somebody else's house uninvited, but especially so the Premier. But I'd also like to add this, too. I don't agree with the media showing up there either. And the reason is they've also invaded his privacy, too. And so tonight when we watch the news, there'll be pictures of his street, his driveway, possibly his home, and all kinds of stuff. And he's a neighbor of mine. He lives somewhere in the neighborhood. I don't even know where he lives.
Here's the thing, Wayne. I've known where he's lived for a long time. Like, it's not a secret for us. We generally don't report the distinguishing information. I don't plan on reporting the distinguishing information that would allow anyone else to find his residence this morning. And I expect that other media will take appropriate care and precautions to prevent others from doing so.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm hoping, because my first thought was, you know, it's pretty easy from looking at images or video footage of where something's filmed when you know the general municipality, for example. So I don't want them to get, you know, when you videotape these people doing it, you're kind of, in a way, they're being glorified. They're like, look, we made the news and stuff, too, so I wouldn't give them a whole lot of credit. Kind of like those killers from Port Alberni, they just completely stopped reporting on it, right? Or any notorious person who's done horrible things, you don't report it anymore because you don't give them airtime. So I'm hoping that after they do air this tonight, I hope it's the end of it and they don't show the videos ever again.
Wayne, thanks for the call. I hear what you mean. I want to point out nobody's killed anybody. And again, this is something that I wrestled with. Like, I wasn't blasting out over Twitter that they're targeting the Premier's home. As when I found out, just it was 7:20. I think it was 7:26. I heard. I'd have to check my notes, but because one, we didn't know if it was real. Two, you didn't want to glorify it. Three, you don't want to cause it. You don't want to say, hey, this is going to happen, and that's what causes it to happen, because the notice becomes the promotion. So we waited until it was already in effect. We waited until we actually had a camera crew on scene there, and we communicated with our camera crew, with CTV Vancouver Island, and they confirmed for us that the blockade had been established. It was not until that point that we reported the matter. So, and I stand by the decisions that were made here, editorially speaking, this morning. Thank you for the call, Wayne. Let's go to Genevieve. Genevieve, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You know, I am very, very sorry at what has happened. These people have no business showing up at the Premier's home, let alone anyone else's home.
No.
And, you know, people talk about your right to protest. A few years ago, I made a couple of comments, and next thing I knew, I started getting letters, but I didn't really care. You know, you can write what you want, but this has to stop. I know the police has been tippy-toeing around blockades and this and that and the other. This has to stop.
Yes,
because
it's
becoming dangerous. And if any of these people hurt the Premier and his family or anyone else by showing up at their home, they need to be dealt with the full force of the law. Some of them need to end up with criminal records.
and they're going to find that they can't cross borders and all of this kind of thing. You know, this has gone too far, and I don't know when we are going to stand up and say enough is enough.
Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, I don't know either. Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Thank you for the call. 250-386-1161 *1070. There's another breaking news item. You would not believe me if I told you. I think we're going to confirm it in the next couple of minutes. We're covering the blockade that was in effect at BC Premier John Horgan's home earlier today, doing open lines on that. Dan is up next. Hey, Dan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I would just like to say I'm not a supporter of Horgan, but I'm very, very, very taken aback and feel very bad for his family and for him personally. These people have crossed the line, but they keep crossing lines.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Adam, now this, and I would like your comment.
Yeah, yeah.
When they block people's life, people from getting to work, no one gets arrested. But now, all of a sudden, they're in front of Horgan's house, and there are lightning fast arrests.
Yeah.
Why is he above? Is he more special than other working people? I want to say clearly, I'm so upset by this. But the NDP, they encourage these people, and now they've come back to haunt them. And why is the law not being enforced for everyone? Why is it all of a sudden they show up in Horgan's house and all of a sudden the lightning fast arrest? Please, I like your comment.
If I had to guess, I would start by observing that it is up to the discretion of officers on scene as to how to best apply the law given those circumstances. Someone who is protesting public policy and blocking a bridge is blocking all members of the public who may use that bridge. Someone who protests the premier's house by blocking it because they want to affect public policy is seeking to apply leverage on one man, John Horgan, to by extension affect the entire province. I think the distinction between those two things is that the public protesting in a public place in a public way is acceptable. Protesting a private place and a private person's home, that is not acceptable. That's what I would tell you, Dan.
I still feel that the NDP has asked for this, but now they're paying the price.
Yeah, they are.
And the problem is, you know, protest is fine, but these people are going to continue to cross the line. So is this it now? Are they finally going to stand up and start arresting and fining these people? Because if you want to stop them, hit them where it hurts.
Yeah.
In the pocketbook.
Yep, absolutely, Dan. Thanks for the call. 250-386-1161 *1070, a free call on your wireless device. I want to commend the Royal Canadian Mounted Police this morning for taking action swiftly as necessary for clearing what we are told is a blockade in front of the Premier's home. You would not believe the lack of self-awareness that some of those protesters had out there today. I want to play some audio here. It's difficult to actually hear exactly what is being said, and we have cleaned this up because there were some expletives that were uttered in it. But you actually hear one of the protesters complaining because the premier used coarse language with them. Like, that is how little self-awareness, in my judgment, is being presented here.
Political BS.
So you hear them say
political spam.
They say political BS, political spam, whatever that is.
Shame on Chet Booth for endorsing this activity.
Shame.
Premier criticizing a media outlet for, in his judgment, endorsing this. Then the response.
Shame on you,
the free press. Thanks for being here.
Good.
Hey, I'm the free press. Do me a favor, guys. Stay off my side. I don't want Extinction Rebellion over here claiming to speak for me or for any of my colleagues. You don't.
Good morning, Horgan. Horgan,
you invaded the Wet'suwet'en homeland.
John Horgan didn't invade anyone's homeland. This matter has been brewing for a long time. The Honorable Madam Justice Church issued an injunction in January of the year 2019 that allowed RCMP to dismantle a blockade that was constructed in 2012 after that area was identified as a possible route for the pipeline. Let's continue.
You made it personal, John.
John did not make it personal for anyone. You guys are making it personal by showing up at a man's home.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then you hear, oh, that's awesome. I don't know who that individual is. It's a female voice.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, that's what it is. You hear a woman saying, oh, that's awesome. He said go, and we're told that the premier used coarse language today, as you better believe I would if this happened to me.
Oh, that's awesome.
What's that?
That's incredible.
Did you hear that? Oh, that's awesome. He said go expletive deleted yourselves. That's incredible. And you hear the glee in their voice. You think these people are concerned only with climate? You think these people are concerned only with Aboriginal rights? Or do you hear delight in that voice at the emotional distress that they have created in British Columbia's First Minister? I can't help but suspect the latter, ladies and gentlemen, and I doubt I'm alone. Quick break. News is next.
Now, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
And because everything's happening at once, there's been a plane crash in the Saanich Peninsula. We're endeavoring to get more information. You just heard it in our newscasts. I have seen a photograph of what appears to be the aircraft. It is inverted upside down on the ground. Wheels are seen protruding into the air. It looks to my eye like a Cessna 172. Not sure, though, waiting for official confirmation of that matter. We're going to keep covering the blockade of the Premier's home that has since been taken down. There's a plane crash on the peninsula, and it's budget day. You know, there are days when doing a live broadcast like this really does feel like juggling chainsaws. Let's go to Sylvia. Sylvia, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Adam. You know, there is no talking to these protesters, and the situation has indeed reached a truly dangerous point. Right now, as far as I'm concerned, all of the MLAs should be on watch for their own bodies and their property.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it should be. And saying, oh, we need dialogue and understanding. It's gotten beyond that. He can talk till he's blue in the face and it won't get him anywhere. And kudos to the police that are trying to handle the situation, but these protesters, I'm afraid they can escalate it to kidnapping even.
Well, who knows what they'll try, right? Like it's,
right. Yeah, or else they'll claim the airspace above their so-called lands and take it a notch higher and stop the transportation system. I'll leave it at that.
Sylvia, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. 250-386-1161 star 1070. You know, this is part of the audio that was recorded at the scene this morning, and this is what gets me. Like, listen to this. Like, let's turn this way up. Can we do that, please? All right, because it's.
Oh, that's awesome.
What's that?
That's incredible.
Oh, that's awesome. He said, "Go bleep yourselves." That's incredible. No, it's not. It's not incredible what Extinction Rebellion did today. And you know what? That glee, that mirth that you see there, do you really believe that the only thing these people care about is Indigenous rights and the only thing these people care about is the climate? Or do they enjoy just causing chaos? I heard a lot of enjoyment in that comment. Let's go to John. Hey, John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's disgusting. The whole thing is, the minute they block a road, even if they just arrest two people and charge them and maybe deport them, then they got to start. But they let them get out of hand.
Now you say deport them. You think these are protesters from the United States? I don't know that they are. I haven't seen any evidence.
I think there's something different. Have you heard the news that this same extinct group, they should be extinct, they're over in London, England.
Well,
protesting.
It's just, what it is, it's like a brand, right? They don't have a membership role. You don't have to apply. Nobody can kick you out. You just sort of say that you're with Extinction Rebellion, and then you get to laugh about how you scare the Premier and force him to come home. And then when he uses coarse language, you get to be mirthful and feel strong and feel important. It's really actually sad. Sad people doing sad things, in my judgment, John.
Well, they have to be tough with them, arrest them. If some can be deported, I'm quite sure there's some from the States. They might be sponsored by some very wealthy person down there, one of what I call the green goons of the world. You can be green, but these are the green goons. So you can't be nice to them, arrest them. I could never vote for Horgan, but at this time, I'd go up there with a baseball bat and help them out.
By playing some games afterwards, John, because we're not going to commit violence against anybody.
Of course,
absolutely. Ping pong. Absolutely.
This is gotten too far. You have to arrest them, and believe me, then you'll get places. But you see, now they've crossed over this line. Some of the ND people that realize you can protest, but don't block the roads. Don't get in the way.
Don't go to people's houses. John, thank you. Appreciate the call. Take care. 250-386-1161, star 1070. Let's go next to Kathleen. Kathleen, you're on the air. What do you make of what you've been hearing this morning?
Well, I'm shocked.
Yeah.
If you or I went to somebody's house and started playing drums at 3 in the morning, we'd be considered criminals.
Probably. I would not at all be surprised if that happened.
And today is budget day. And I'm just wondering if we will get an honest report from the government on the amount of money that is given to the Indigenous people.
Indigenous Affairs is a federal government matter, Kathleen. That would be in the federal budget day, not the provincial budget day, I'm afraid.
Oh,
yeah.
Why not? Does the province give them any money?
The province does, but it's not nearly as much money as comes from the federal government. Indigenous matters are generally the purview of the government of Canada, with the provinces, of course, playing a role to some degree, but not nearly as much as the feds.
Okay, it's time for honesty and truth, because we all hear the rumors about how the chief gets all the monies,
well,
and they don't pass it down to the... all the people.
The problem is that there are
poverty.
Yeah, the problem, Kathleen, is that there's 600 bands across Canada. Like, there's 600 Indigenous nations. So to make general statements about any of them, you're almost always guaranteed to be wrong. So that's why we want to be careful about that. Right?
Okay, population of Canada is 41 million.
Give or take.
How much of it is in I can't pronounce
Indigenous? I believe it's approximately 3% of memory serves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, how many of these criminals... And I'm talking about the Indigenous...
I don't think there were any Indigenous people at the Premier's office, the Premier's home today,
at least not that I've seen. Oh, so the protesters...
It was Extinction Rebellion. It was the same cast of characters we've seen over and over again, as far as I could tell. I have not seen comprehensive video showing every person there, but I have seen the individuals lying down on the Premier's driveway, and my eye thinks they look remarkably similar to the same two individuals who are older Caucasian men who blocked the highway near the ferry terminal a couple of weeks ago, but I have yet to verify that fact at this time.
Okay, then one thing about the oil and gas.
Yes.
Automobiles still use oil and gas,
yes,
right?
They do, yeah.
We need it. So Canada's a small country population-wise,
yes.
But we have the resources. What's so wrong about getting them until we have something else to replace the oil and gas that our cars take and our trucks and our vehicles?
That's a question many people are asking, Kathleen.
I know.
But thank you for the call, all right?
Yeah, okay. And it hurts the heart that this is happening in Victoria.
It's I'm beyond hurt. I'm into anger now, Kathleen. Like it's
good. I'm glad now we'll get some results.
All right, Kathleen. Thank you.
Get your little flag and go.
Absolutely. I feel angry on behalf of the Premier this morning. I have been very hard on the Premier over the years, partially because I was afraid that something similar to this would happen. And I understand why the NDP did what it did to try to keep the environmental part of the electorate on side. So that we would have this situation where everybody would realize that the government was being more environmentally progressive than any government to ever come before it. But they didn't. They actually, instead of getting rewarded for good behavior, the activists will treat you worse if you try to help them, if you're nice to them. It's like instead of recognizing a genuine attempt to ally and to work hand in hand with them, they see it as weakness. They mistake charity for cowardice, and they launch the attack. And then if you're nice to them again, they think that it worked, so they'll do it even more. And what's even worse is the braver ones are out front, always pushing things forward. But you know what? There's any number of them who stand back, and they're cowards. They don't want to push anything forward themselves. But they watch the tests that are committed by others. And every time one of them gets away with it, all the others that are waiting in the wings get just a little bit braver. And they think, maybe I'll try next time. It doesn't end well for anybody. It just doesn't. Let's go to Scott next. Hey, Scott, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Wow, it's a dark day, isn't it, Adam?
It is. You know what? Those protesters laugh and say, oh, that's awesome. The Premier used coarse language against them. You know what? They're lucky. They're very lucky that they live in a country like Canada. Can you imagine what would happen if you tried that in the U.S.? Can you imagine what would happen if you tried that in any number of other countries around the world? They are lucky we are so nice to them, Scott.
Well, I wish we were a little bit more like Korea today, I'll tell you that. And that being North Korea. This is a joke. This is a terrible travesty. It's bringing down Canada's world standings or economical power, everything.
They're laughing at us. They're laughing at us.
Take away all their welfare checks and all this billions of dollars given to the 3%, the native population.
I don't even know if it was the native population today. I'm still looking for a representative of a nation who was actually out there. As far as I can tell, it's just Extinction Rebellion wanting to do something to feel important.
Yeah, but I don't care. The native issue, 3% of this population, and we give billions of dollars, which is the last caller's right, just gets squandered. Who knows where it goes? This is crazy. It's absolute sadness of this whole situation. Everybody was on this land before somebody. Let's say Adam and Eve, if you're religious. Everybody was here first. I was here before you, Adam. So what do I get? What does my family get for being in Victoria over 100 years? We don't get anything. So, you know what? I'm not for paying the million of dollars that I've spent in income tax in my working years so far that's gone to support all the native issues, the billions that are spent. And the Canadian population shouldn't stand for it. Send in the National Guard. I know it's a U.S. term, but arrest everybody.
Scott, thanks for the call. Take care. Folks, I think that there are any number of people out there feeling emotions similar to what Scott is experiencing. And it is not because there is wickedness or intolerance in their hearts. It is because they feel that they are, to some degree, being betrayed and injured by those whom they have sought to help, whom they have sought to treat better, to treat fairly, those whom they have opened their arms to and embraced. And then this is how that gets repaid. MLAs get blocked from the ledge. The premier gets targeted at his home. This is how the most pro-Indigenous rights government that has ever existed in the history of British Columbia gets treated because of its stance on Indigenous rights. More people need to consider how many other folks are out there watching right now, spellbound. They won't say anything, but they'll say, that's what happens when we do the right thing. That we get attacked, we get punished for being nice. If you punish somebody for doing anything, eventually they're going to stop. Don't punish them for doing what you want them to do, even if the step is not as large as you would have preferred. I think we need to change topics now. I know that this is a breaking matter, but the blockade itself is down. RCMP have effected arrests. We're covering a plane crash right now, and it's budget day here in British Columbia. So we're going to take a quick break. Richard McCandless is going to be joining us from BC Policy Perspectives coming up after the break. His thoughts on the Insurance Corporation of British Columbia, because that should be mentioned in today's budget. Then Joy McPhail is going to be joining us, board chair of the Insurance Corporation of British Columbia. We'll have more time for open lines, though, later on in the show. Keep it locked.
Keeping you informed, Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
You know, one final thought before we move on to our next topic regarding the Premier's house being targeted by Extinction Rebellion this morning. Premier has been nice. The Premier used every tool in the toolbox, much to my dissatisfaction, to try to frustrate or similarly encumber the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion project. And in the end, it was worth absolutely nothing. In the end, the environmentalists attack him more than they attack the pro-resource side of the political spectrum. They're punishing the behavior that they supposedly want to see. All right. Well, that sends a message. You punish anybody when they do something enough times and they learn to associate that activity with that displeasure, so they start to avoid the activity, even if they don't realize it. Meanwhile, government has a choice. It can fight them now or it can fight them later. They'll be stronger later. I think they're going to want to fight them now. But hey, we'll see what happens, won't we? Today is budget day here in BC, which is why the Premier's house was targeted in the first place. They tried to blockade him in there. Those geniuses didn't even check to see if he was home first. He wasn't, but he actually returned home for reasons still unknown to us at this time, perhaps to protect his property, perhaps to provide comfort to any persons who may have been in the residence. Nevertheless, he should never have had to do so in the first place. I want to talk about ICBC, though, because that is one of the matters of public importance that we are expecting to be addressed to some degree in today's budget document. Rick McCandless is joining us. He writes for BC Policy Perspectives. He has some thoughts on these and other matters. Rick, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Adam. How are you?
Oh, it's a busy day, Rick. We're also covering
this. Yeah, I've
been listening. Okay, so the plane crash, too. Now, I am pleased to report that there are no serious injuries that I have heard about with the plane crash. Somehow, this pilot managed to land the thing upside down, and it's still largely in one piece. Whoever that pilot is, I'm sure, deserves praise for his or her skill, but we'll follow that as well. Rick, what is the situation with ICBC and these lump sum payments versus the continuing payments? Because I know you monitored a segment that we did last week with Michael Mulligan from Mulligan Defense Lawyers, and you have your own appraisal of that situation.
Yeah, it's not... Mr. Mulligan, I'm sure, is a very good criminal lawyer, but he's not an accountant. He was confusing cash flow with accrual accounting, and there's no... He completely got it wrong, and there's no issue here at all. And the savings that ICBC is going to generate from the going to no-fault is not coming from how they're going to pay them. It's what they're going to pay them for. And they're not going to pay them for pain and suffering. And the legal costs, both ICBC and plaintiff, are going to drop dramatically. So that's where most of the savings are coming from. And also, I should mention, future wage losses is also in there, too, as a savings. So that's where the money comes from. That's how we're all supposed to get around $400 knocked off our average price of our premium in a year and a half or whatever it's going to take. So that's really the story there.
What is your understanding of the change between the lump sum payments and the installment payments going forward into perpetuity?
In what sense?
Is there a change that's happening? Because that was large.
Yeah, I mean, right now the system is you put your claim in and it takes many months, sometimes years, to settle it, either through negotiation or through court action, and you get a lump sum payment, and that's it. That's the end of it. And under the new model, the care-based model, you get paid for your actual out-of-pocket expenses for physio and other expenses, wage loss, and that will continue as long as you need that care, up to $7.5 million in your lifetime.
All right. So, I can see where... I think I see what's being discussed here. I also wanted your thoughts on the care-based model in general. Like, I don't like calling it that. It feels like a focus group thing. Well, it does. It's like, no, Adam, our insurance is care-based. It's like, what, you have like a jar of care somewhere and you just like what does that even mean?
Well, I mean, I think it's the way to go. It's obviously proven in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and Quebec.
I'm not disagreeing with the substance. I'm disagreeing with the form of calling it a care-based model instead of no-fault
that's
insurance.
Semantics, I guess.
Yeah.
And actually, Adam, I'd rather talk about a couple other things that are just come up recently that I think your listeners should be aware of.
All right. And I did see that email from you earlier. Sorry, I'm covering all this stuff. What did you want to talk about again? Refresh my memory.
Well, the government, when they had made the announcement back on February the 6th, what they didn't announce was that they've basically directed the Utilities Commission to approve the rate increase for the coming year at zero for basic, but there will be no process. There will be no application, no review. So we're going to be missing a lot of information that we normally would have gotten through the Utilities Commission. They basically put the Utilities Commission on the sideline for a year.
Why would they do that when the Utilities Commission could have simply verified their claims?
Yes, good question. They will probably argue, and this is what you could put to Ms. McPhail.
Yes.
Why did they do that? They'll say, we're going to be too busy bringing in the new system, so we don't have time to be accountable.
But if they already have their plans in place, could they not submit those plans to the Utilities Commission for at least some sort of review? Because it seems odd for them to be completely cut out.
Well, there's two reviews that happen. One's called a rate design review. That's what they will go to go to the no-fault. And then there's the annual rate request application, which is the sort of inflationary increases, etc. So they have these two separate processes, and often they get mixed. But anyway, so they're putting on hold the normal annual rate review, and sometime probably in the fall they will go in with the request to have the commission rubber stamp the new no-fault.
It would seem the presumption is that the rates will all decrease after this year. In fact, that's supposedly.
Yes.
Yeah. So is that locked in? Is that statute or how is that going to be determined?
No, it's to be determined depending on how many crashes there are and the severity of the crashes. But we won't know that because they're not going to tell us. That's the problem with not having a rate review.
Okay, I see.
And then there's a second thing that's happened just recently, too.
Yes.
In the news today, there's a Canadian Press story that came out yesterday or whatever it was about interview with Finance Minister James, who implied that taxpayer money was being spent to be, or was being redirected from higher spending priorities to bail out ICBC, and that's completely false.
Yeah.
And I put a note out about that yesterday, but unfortunately, these things get out there in the media and confuse people with incorrect information. It's just not true at all. The losses at ICBC meant that all the equity, and I call it the policyholders' equity, that was built up over the years at ICBC has just been completely disappeared, destroyed by these losses. There's been no taxpayer support to ICBC ratepayers at all.
Now, the Minister of Finance may have been engaging in a political speech to suggest that the monies that were taken out through the profit, I can't remember, what did they call it, the dividend or the profit sharing
program? They call it excess capital.
Excess capital. Now, could that be to what she's referring? No? Okay.
No, that ended back in 2015. That's history now.
Okay.
What she, I believe, is doing is putting the narrative out there that through no fault, we're going to save a lot of money, and we're going to fix this problem that's diverted taxpayer money to ICBC. So we're going to solve that problem. Well, it's not a problem.
Interesting. Now,
it hasn't been a problem. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Now this is interesting because when this first happened, I thought, well, if ICBC really can't be saved, that means that no one could have saved it from the initial point that the Liberals lost office and the NDP took over. I thought, how are they going to still blame this on the Liberals? Because even if the Liberals mismanaged the thing, if public insurance itself is still workable, you would think the NDP could just make the appropriate changes, put whatever money needs to be put in from the public treasury, and then have the system run again. They're choosing not to do that. Ergo, the Liberals, it would seem, are not totally to blame for this, but by saying taxpayers were supporting ratepayers, etc., etc., the Minister of Finance may be still trying to keep the last government in this. What do you think?
Yeah, but I think even more, it's to bolster the argument which will take place in the legislature as to why we're going to now shift to no-fault from the hybrid tort model that they went through last year.
Because
we went from full tort to hybrid tort, and now we're going no fault.
Yeah.
And the question is, why switch from the hybrid tort to the no fault? Because you've only been doing it for less than a year. Why make the switch? And their answer is, it was costing too much money. We want to give everybody lower rates. And by the way, side issue, it was theoretically diverting taxpayer money to ICBC, which is not correct.
Interesting. Richard McCandless, I appreciate your perspective on this. Rick McCandless writes for BC Policy Perspectives. Any final thoughts?
No, I'll listen with interest to your discussion with Ms. McPhail. You should also know, if you don't, the deputy chair of the board of ICBC is Doug Allen, who headed up the NDP look at no fault back in the late 90s.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Thank you, as always, for your knowledge and your insight, Rick. It is greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's Rick McCandless, writes for the website BC Policy Perspectives. I am always interested in hearing his assessments and opinions on the state of our public insurer. Quick break. Join McPhail, chair of the board of ICBC's, up after the news.